This is A Wild Conversation.
Hi, my name is Callum Hughes. I'm a zookeeper here at the Greater Vancouver Zoo.
And I'm Ashley Wysock, also a zookeeper here at the Greater Vancouver Zoo.
And today on A Wild Conversation, in honor of May the 4th, as in May the 4th be with you.
It's also my grandpa's birthday.
We're going to be talking about how, just like the Jedi who bring balance to the Force, how conservationists can bring balance to ecosystems. Are you a Star Wars fan?
No.
What?
I'm sorry. Well, like, I've watched most of some. I've watched okay. stuff.
We're gonna need a movie night. Oh, no. We're gonna need to get all the stuff together. We're gonna. I'm popcorn. I'm thinking a lot of milk duds, and some fizzy drinks, and we are gonna have to binge watch it all.
I'm gonna get a lot of hate for this. I don't know, man. I really like animals, and there wasn't a lot of animals in Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, there were.
There were some, but they're not animals that I know.
True, but they can be inspired by real-life animals.
That's true. That is true. I'll take that. I'll take that.
So I'm also going to throw in a bunch of Star Wars quotes. So to anyone listening...
Gosh, that's going to go right over my head.
I will announce how many of the quotes that I have said during the podcast. So if you hear any, definitely count them out.
There you go.
All right. So often when we talk about bringing balance to ecosystems, mm-hmm. it can be thrown out of flux. This could be like from an invasive species or the disappearance of a species that's been over-harvested or restoring that ecosystem that might be polluted.
Yeah.
A good example is bringing wolves back to Yellowstone, right?
Yes. That's a very. I feel like that's probably one of the most well-known ones, or at least in the biological field.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, bringing it back was a tricky endeavor. And mm-hmm. A lot of the biologists, when asked about what the chances of success, would say, don't tell me the odds.
Oh, gosh. I don't want to hear it.
They basically introduced them from Canada. And when they did, they noticed that the ecosystem improved greatly from mm-hmm. The control of deer species, control of coyotes that were eating the songbirds, for example, and even beaver were doing better as a role. And bears were doing better.
That's really cool.
Because they could scavenge from the kills.
There's a reason why it developed this way, you know? They all are together for a reason. I don't know why my words are not working for me today.
No, I get it. It's like predators will control prey. Prey will control, herbivores will control vegetation. Mm-hmm. And vegetation will often control like ecological processes, yeah. like flooding.
And it's always a lot more complicated than we even really understand.
Exactly. Yeah. The wolves are definitely an example. Another good example is that we've talked about before in a podcast, the sea otters.
Oh, yeah.
And you know why they brought balance, right?
Yeah, sea urchins and... all that good stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Another example that's going on the Christmas Islands. Have you heard of the Christmas Islands?
I've heard of them. Tell me what's going on them.
So they're like an island that is a part of the Australian territory.
Okay.
And on that island, the dominant species are actually land crabs.
Huh.
Right?
That's so weird.
Something I've always wanted to see, and one day I hope I'll be lucky enough to see, is the Christmas Islands red crab migration. Like, millions of these land crabs that would live in burrows come out and they migrate towards the ocean because they still need to reproduce.
Oh. But do they spend most of their time on land?
Yes.
Then? Whoa, that's
really
cool. On the
center of the islands, in burrows. They might hide up during the dry season because it gets too dry for them to breed because they still need to keep their gills nice and moist.
Interesting.
But they need the sea in order to reproduce still. They still have that kind of ancestral thing where they need the ocean to release their fertilized eggs. They live as plankton for a small species for a while.
Okay.
Truck just went by. And they make their way back onto land and migrate back onto the land.
So cool. I've actually never heard of those guys before. Oh, that's fascinating.
They migrate in such great numbers that golf courses on Christmas Islands have rules for the crabs knocking your ball away from the hole or into the hole. Totally counts.
That's hilarious.
Serious consideration for driving too, because
I'm kidding.
one, you end up killing crabs, and the other side is that the crabs will get revenge and destroy your tires with their claws and hard exoskeleton. So not worth running those guys over.
I would imagine, like, in the migratory season, you'd borderline just have to shut down the islands. Like, okay, everyone, we're all just going to watch them migrate.
Actually, it's a big thing for their tourism.
Oh, is it?
It's world famous, so a lot of people come to see it. I definitely want to be a part of that.
That's really cool.
One day.
Now that travel's opening back up.
Yeah, true.
There you go.
But recently, what they've noticed is about 25% to one-third of the crab population has been killed off.
Really?
And the responsible species for that is an invasive species of ant called the yellow crazy ant. Yellow crazy ants. probably not a good name to put on your resume.
Yeah, you're no
probably,
kidding.
Probably not going to get the job. But these guys, they can form super colonies.
Why are they called crazy ants?
Because they...
Because of the crazy size?
No, because they are quite aggressive. Yeah.
Okay.
They can form super colonies where they have more than one queen. If you were to ask a biologist how many yellow crazy ants might be present in the colony, they'll say, well, they've got about 200,000 units ready to go, and about a million more well on their way.
Oh, gosh.
And what they do to these red island crabs is that they will spray their formic acid. And it gets on their eyes, it gets into their, I think, their mouth parts, their gills, and it basically blinds the crab.
Aww.
And disorientates them, and they end up dying as a result.
Well, this turned into a very sad story.
But conservationists have been working towards fixing this problem.
Okay.
They've been putting down poison baits specifically for the ants.
Okay.
Two kinds of poisons, I think. One to take back and sterilize the queens, and the other one to kill the colony.
Hmm.
Only problem with this is it basically wipes them out all the way to inaccessible parts of the island where they can't put the poisons down, and they repopulate afterwards.
Oh. That's a bit of a problem. Okay.
They have been bringing in a new species of micro wasp.
Oh.
Right. So, I mean, this might be a bit controversial because you're using a new species, exotic species, to control an invasive species.
Which might potentially become an invasive species themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like the cane toad, right, is a prime example in Australia. They introduced cane toads in order to eat cane beetles. And the cane toads preferred the native species. It was done by the sugar cane industry. And I think the sugar cane industry's response was, it was said that you would destroy the problems, not join them. You were supposed to bring balance to the ecosystem, not leave it in darkness.
Oh my gosh.
But the difference is they've done their research on this.
Okay.
They've looked at this micro wasp, and it is species specific. So it doesn't actually target the yellow ants. It targets another invasive species, like a kind of aphid.
Interesting.
So that produces sugar, and the ants kind of have that kind of symbiotic relationship. So it lays its eggs inside these aphids and it kills them, kind of aphid-like creatures.
Okay.
Which is a food source for the ants. So by depleting that food source and only targeting that one non-native species, it can limit how quickly these ant populations can grow or potentially control them.
I have a question.
Go for it.
Where are these yellow crazy ants originally from if they're an invasive species? Do you know?
I believe they're from Africa.
Oh, yeah. I feel like a lot of very intense, aggressive animals come from Africa.
I mean, anywhere. Like, you hear about the African honeybees, for example, yeah, right?
That's true. They've got very awesome, intense animals, and I love it.
Definitely. But this has been researched, so they have been looking at how it affects the native species, and they do know that this species is species-specific, and it has been approved by the... environmental Australian authority regarding the issue.
It is really good that they're checking this before just being like, this eats that animal, so we'll release this. Oops. Well, let's get the next animal that'll eat that. Oops.
Exactly, right?
That's when you come into big problems.
You've heard about the lionfish in the Caribbean, right?
I know about lionfish. What are we talking about in the Caribbean?
They're invasive there, big time.
Okay. I like them though. I've always known them as zebra turkey fish.
Zebra turkey fish.
I think that's what they were called in Animal Crossing.
Okay, that's fair.
They're great. I love them.
They are awesome, beautiful animals in their natural habitat, but in the Caribbean, they're doing a lot of damage. They are relentless predators, eating small fish, and they have, they're not poisonous, but they have venom on spines. So that kind of deters some of the natural predators. As a result, there has been a decline in some of the fish stocks for local fishermen, decline in the health of the reef systems, and an explosion of these lionfish that were introduced as, I believe, released or escaped pets.
Pets?
Yeah, they
you
were in the pet
them
trade.
As pets?
In an aquarium, yeah.
Oh my gosh. 8-year-old Ashley would probably freak out about that idea. They were my favorite fish growing up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you're probably not going to like what I'm going to say next. Okay. So there is efforts to control their numbers.
Okay.
And some of the things that conservationists are doing are actually trying to train the local predators to eat them.
Oh.
By spearfishing them and feeding them specifically to sharks, grouper, barracuda, teaching them ways to get around the spines.
Interesting.
And to view them as a food source.
Huh.
Other things too is that local communities are spearfishing for them, and they're taking people to hunt them, for example.
Interesting.
You can eat them. They are actually good to eat. Huh. Just need to remove the spines, no problem. They're not like the puffer fish. They're not poisonous. There's no risk of eating them. It's only if their spines penetrate your skin and you get injected with their venom that you'll actually suffer the pain.
That's interesting. I didn't know you could eat them. I also really like the idea of they're basically teaching the ecosystem to defend itself.
Yeah.
Rather than just trying to only remove them themselves. They're like, come on, guys. We've got to get the whole community together.
Absolutely. And they also provide lionfish jewelry.
What?
Yeah. You can get the fins. You can dry them. You can dye them. They don't stink. They don't smell. I've actually got one from a trip to Belize. Because I had to give my support to this.
Interesting.
It's a great way to help support the local community. So to any listeners that are thinking about taking any holidays to the Caribbean, Belize, Mexico, anywhere around that area, I strongly recommend that you go on one of these spearfishing trips. Now, I know probably some of our viewers are probably thinking, I know what it is that I have to do, but I'm not sure if I have the strength to do it. But I will say that by taking part in this activity, you are supporting local communities. You are helping protect the reef, and the animal that you do, or animals that you do end up catching or killing, will be eaten and used to make parts, for example. So it's not being wasted.
That's really interesting to me, because it kind of puts point to when you're traveling and when you're doing this, you should always do your research first. Right? Because in general, when you go to other countries, it's a really good practice to not buy animal products, right?
Yes.
Like big cat teeth or claws, because you don't know how they came into possession of those, right? Or like snake skin leather and alligator leathers and stuff like that. Those kind of things shouldn't be supported. So it's kind of interesting. This is almost in like the exact opposite way, because they need to be controlled.
Yeah.
And this is an effective way of doing it.
If you're in that area and you're comfortable with doing it, yeah. I definitely recommend that you execute Order 66.
Oh, my God.
I had to.
It's like one of those things, though, too. Like, wherever you go, don't buy ivory. Even if they say it's like, because one of the ways they're getting around it is saying that it's antique ivory.
Yes.
But there's no way to prove that. They'll just say it, because then it's like technically ethical, even though it's not. I don't know, it's such an interesting, the big thing is, if you're gonna go traveling, you should do your research, but where are you going and how to actually support local conservation.
Definitely. If you're ever in question about how you can contribute in controlling invasives, it's always good to talk with the local wildlife authority of that area.
Mm-hmm.
Or Fish and Wildlife Service. Because it's not even, you can't just sometimes participate in wiping out invasive species. Sometimes you need proper training.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say this, if you go spearfishing, definitely go with a guide, especially if you're an amateur, because spearfishing can be dangerous. But other things is to make sure that you're hitting the right species.
Yeah, because you don't want to accidentally help wipe out something that we need.
Exactly. There's an invasive species of giant rat, like the capybara, called the nutria.
What?
Yep.
Like the capybara, like it's that big?
Not as big as the capybara. It's just big for rats.
Okay.
And they're invasive in certain parts. And the problem... Yeah. The problem is with...
Sorry.
You work with the capybaras.
I am, and I know how big they are, and I just imagined a rat that size like coming out of the wall like, I'm going to steal stuff. And I was like, okay, no, it's all good. The mental image was just too much.
I mean, capybaras are technically giant rats too, you know?
But
giant rodents. I guess rats a bit specific.
Yeah, but they make guinea pig noises, and I love them.
Well, the nutria is doing damage.
And they don't have that really long tail.
Yeah. And they are basically trying to control their numbers, but sometimes people make mistakes and they will shoot something like an otter in the water.
Oh, no.
Exactly, because they look the same. We can't always have a wildlife biologist with us who can say, these aren't the species you're looking for. Move along.
Okay.
But if you are able to get the proper training, for example, that can certainly help with wildlife efforts. I know that a lot of volunteers are catching the pythons, for example, in Florida to remove them from the Everglades.
Oh, interesting.
Right?
Yeah. Trying to get everything back into balance, which can be a very hard and lengthy process.
Mm. Yeah. It's always about making sure that you're following guidelines that have been done through research and efforts that have been put together by conservationists.
And agreed upon, because sometimes, you know, there's certain parties who don't agree with this. Or like they're having a lot of trouble right now with the hippo population in South America.
Yes, yeah.
Because they're technically invasive, but the locals love them. So now it's this weird balancing act of like, okay, but we don't want them to destroy the ecosystem. So we got to figure out something, right?
Absolutely. Do not. There is no try.
Mm-hmm.
We got to put the effort for that. That's been really cool talking about how conservationists bring about a balance to the ecosystem. I want to make one more Star Wars reference. I just need you to say, punch it, Callum.
Punch it, Callum? Oh my god, I just got roped into this.
All right, that makes 7 for anyone that was keeping count, just so you know. Sorry if I've gone down in any level of respect.
I think I got like one of them. I actually knew it before you were like...
Was it the one I did in a voice? You know, execute Order 66? Because I'd be surprised if you missed that one.
No, that I did not catch that one.
Oh no. Man. No.
I'm special. It's fine.
So I have a little something for you, what? Separate from our topic.
What is happening?
Because
today?
It is going to be your birthday.
Oh my gosh.
And I hope you like this.
Why you're doing this, on the you're doing this on the podcast?
I'm doing this on the podcast.
Your inner fish.
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
It is a part of my quest to get you to love fish. And
what?
It is a book that like gives all like how humans evolved from fish.
So you're features. Trying to make me be like, I am a fish.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Check out page 1. What do you see?
Aw, you wrote on it. And there's, ooh, marks. I'm going to get myself some new boots.
I mean, look at this. You're already on page 1 and look what you've already received. Imagine the benefits you'll get you finish the book.
I feel like I'm being bullied into this.
But there's more, actually. There's one more thing.
You gave me a gift, but it's actually, there's requirements to how this gets received. Well, I see how it is.
I've circled certain letters throughout the book.
Oh my gosh.
That will give you a code to hidden 2-liter bottle of Dr. Pepper.
No! I have to go through. Oh, Dr. Pepper's my favorite. You know my weakness.
I know your weakness.
I'm going to have to actually flip through this book now.
You could, I mean, you could do that.
Or yeah. I could just rip apart the staff room.
I will warn you, it is nowhere where the public can get to it. It's not in any animal enclosures, and it's nowhere inconvenient or that would otherwise be destroyed.
Oh, I'm going to have to destroy all the staff areas. The public's going to hear me in the back buildings like, what is going on back there?
happy birthday. And it's honestly a pleasure to be working at the zoo with you and doing this podcast with you, Ashley.
That's very kind. And I'm only slightly mad. Your inner fish, a journey into the 3.5 billion year history of the human body.
Oh, and you see that fish on the front cover?
Yes.
I accidentally called it Tiktaalik in a previous podcast. It's actually Tiktaalik.
Yep, I see that.
Supposed to be
the fish with hands.
Yes.
Interesting.
That made that transition, or something like it, that made the transition onto land.
Interesting. Oh.
Oh.
You're so mean.
I do it because I care. Okay. I want you to know that.
Okay.
If anyone has any questions for us, please do not hesitate to email us at podcast@gvzoo.com or DM us on our social media. I'm Callum Hughes.
And I'm Ashley Wysock.
And this has been A Wild Conversation.